We're biblically illiterate in our churches. And so, you know, we have Game Day Sunday, and it's this giant production, and I hope I'm not stepping on too many people's toes.
No,
but, you know, God doesn't come through for who he is. His story is not told. It's more of a psychological soothing, you know, on Sunday morning, practical how-tos, you know, how to get along with everybody, how to be successful. And the God of Scripture is not seen. He's not exalted. His story is not emphasized. And so, of course, the Great Commission is going to get lost. So I mentioned it earlier, the best mobilizer is the Bible. It's Scriptures. Mm-hmm. But you have to let them speak for themselves. You know, we need to be teaching the Word in such a way that when people hear a message, they walk away saying, I saw God today. I mean, that should be every pastor's prayer when they get in the pulpit. When God, I want people to see you this morning. I want people to see Christ. Am I preaching in such a way that you are visible, that you're the one who's exalted and seen?
We read in Matthew 24, Jesus' words, that this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations. But Jesus needs you as a Christian to become equipped for this work. Welcome to the Catalytic Podcast, a ministry resource of 1-8 Catalyst. This podcast exists to give you practical and easy-to-remember tools toward spiritual growth that leads to Great Commission fulfillment. We'll also have interesting interviews of people who have walked the journey towards Great Commission fulfillment, and we'll be able to hear their stories. And now it's time for the Catalytic Podcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me for this, the 11th episode of the Catalytic Podcast. And again, my name is Mike Falkenstein. I do direct a little ministry we like to call 1-8 Catalyst, and a lot going on with our ministry. And so it is an exciting time here at 1-8 Catalyst. And part of what is exciting is these interview episodes that we've been doing, I think, are really showing all of us really the process and the transition going from, hey, I believe in Jesus, to, hey, I decided to do something about that and see where God wanted to use me. And I have another fantastic interview episode for you all. This time, the president at a ministry called 1615, just down I-25 from us here in Denver. Matthew Ellison directs the ministry there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And just in the last couple of weeks, it's been really fun to get to know Matthew. And my friend Steve and I had him on a Missions Talk episode, and now I get to have him on the podcast. Fantastic episode, as you just heard in the teaser. This guy is serious about Great Commission fulfillment. He really has a fantastic testimony, which you'll hear. And so I am so glad that you are with me for this, the latest episode of the Catalytic Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'll have some final comments at the end of the episode. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining me for this latest episode of the Catalytic Podcast. And I have again a fantastic interview episode, this time with Matthew Ellison, the president at 1615. Their tagline is Church Missions Coaching. And Matthew, I know I'm reading your website here, and it says that your mission at 1615, you guys exist to help local churches discover and use their unique gifts in partnership with others to make Christ known amongst all the nations. And I love seeing that. You know, I just wrote a book on the six marks of a church that makes disciples. I think churches really are the key to both disciple making within the larger body, and eventually we see discipleship and Great Commission fulfillment happen through churches, right? So have I got that correct?
And really helping churches understand that every single believer has a role in God's Great Commission and his plan to reach all nations. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff. You know, I dig deep into a single church, and then I've built on that experience. And, you know, I serve as a consultant in missions for the churches across the country.
That's great. Well, I like your what you guys ended up naming your ministry, because, well, really for two reasons, right? Obviously, with our own work, 1-8 Catalyst, we got that name primarily from Acts 1-8. And so,
of course,
you know,
yeah,
using those words and those verses, sometimes you can just, it just kind of, it is a nice tagline for what you're doing. But then also Mark 16:15 actually is a verse that I use all the time when I talk about the Great Commission, right? This is one of, you know, Jesus's commands that he tells all Christians to, you know, to proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. And so I'm sure that gives you some neat ways to be able to, because you're obviously, I'm sure, explaining why it is that you named your ministry 16:15, right? And so then you go, yeah, it's Mark 16:15, and here's what that means. And so that's exciting. I look forward to continuing to get to know more and more about what you guys are doing. So first, we've got really three questions. I've got questions for you, Matthew. One, first question is, I'm interested just to hear a little bit about kind of how you came to know the Lord, how you came to know Christ, and how you made that decision towards receiving and believing in Jesus.
Well, Mike, how much time you got? Okay, well, I think I need to start with my mother.
Okay.
So I'm the last of six kids, and my parents had me when they were about 40. I had just an amazing mom. She's in heaven now, but as a kid, all of the children in the family, they had the privilege of hearing the gospel from our mom. She was faithful to plant God's word in our hearts as we were children and you know, all throughout, you know, growing up at home. I have memories of her at my bedside opening up a little Big Chief pad. I don't know if you remember those Big Chief pads that you got in elementary school when you were learning to write cursive. And we would have verses in there and we'd memorize them. So I really got to start there. You know, those seeds, gospel seeds, were planted in my heart from a young age. And so if you have any listening moms out there who are planting seeds in their kids' hearts, man, there's nothing that compares. So I did not follow Jesus as a young man. Believed in him in my head, but not in my heart. And you've heard that, you know, the distance between head and heart is the longest distance in the world. And so I just kind of lived however I wanted to live, did whatever I wanted to do, and ended up marrying my high school sweetheart. We couldn't seem to live apart from one another, though we never quite got along when we were together. And so we got married. And, you know, being married at the age of 19, obviously incredibly challenging, especially when you're not following Christ and you don't have the foundation of his word in your life. And I came home from work one day and I had a bag packed on our front door. And that was the beginning of the end of our marriage. And God was faithful. He used that painful time to drive me to my knees. I cried out to him and he rescued me. So I think it was C.S. Lewis who said that pain is God's megaphone to rouse a sleeping world. And that certainly was his instrument in my life. Going through the pain of divorce is what finally crushed me. And I cried out to him and there he was, just ready to snatch me up. So yeah, mom planting those seeds. They didn't break open and bear fruit for some time. Lived in the world again and found out it was fleeting and just husks and ashes. There was nothing to it. And yeah, pain. Pain is what drove me to Jesus.
Wow. That's really something. I've had a few friends that have had a similar testimony. And I know that, yeah, while that's hard, it does sound like God has been faithful through that in your life. And so that's exciting. I'm wondering then, so you were drawn to your knees and you, I'm assuming, accepted Christ at that point. And so it'd be interesting now, because I know that you're currently married. Give folks then kind of so you've accepted Christ and kind of what happens next? Because I know you're married. So how did you go from first marriage to who you're married to now and what God did through all of that? I'd be interested to hear about that.
Well, it's interesting. The first person I called, back up, I was living in Seattle, Washington at the time. I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico now, but I was in Seattle. That's where I lived with my wife at the time. And I reached out to a friend of mine who I grew up with in New Mexico. He'd been a guy that I had watched his life. He, I think, trusted Christ when he was maybe 8th or 9th grade. And we went to church together. Again, I was not a follower of Christ, but he was. And there was something different about this guy. And he had been doing these short-term mission trips. And he kept telling me stories and, you know, trying to encourage me to pursue God. And so he was the guy that I called. His name is Chris Abeda. And I gave him a ring, and I was just bawling. I was just crying my eyes out. I was alone in my apartment at the time when this happened. And again, I just got on my knees and cried out to God and just was overwhelmed by his presence. The Holy Spirit just, you know, laid a hold of me. I called him, and told him what was going on and what was happening in my life. And he said, hey, why don't you join me this summer in India on a short-term mission trip? You know, I had just had this encounter with Christ, and here he's inviting me. And I thought, you know, what have I got to lose? Why not? And so started preparing for that trip to India, and India got canceled for whatever reason. And we got diverted to Ghana, West Africa, and probably spent about 60 days there. And it was overwhelming to me. I mean, I just couldn't believe that I was on mission with God. And this phrase just kept playing over and over in my head. I can't believe God is using me. You know, I can't believe God is using me. And I was journaling on the last night of the trip in the city we were staying in, the capital city of Accra. And there was this all-night prayer and worship meeting that was being done by the hosting church, the national church we were working with. And as I listened to these worshipers, you know, proclaim God's greatness in a language my head could not understand, but my heart could. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Mm-hmm. I started to journal, and I just thought, you know, God, all I've ever wanted in life, I don't think I want it anymore. All the things that I thought I needed to make me happy, I really don't need those things. And I looked down at the foot of my cot, and there was that same black bag that had been on my porch in Seattle, just with a few changes of clothing in it, my Bible. And I thought, I'm the richest man in the universe. I really felt that. And something inside of me broke that night. And I would tell people my life trajectory was just severely and wonderfully altered. And everything within me said, yes, this is what you were made for. So I was determined. I wanted to learn more about God. I wanted to learn more about his mission. And I knew this was my purpose. This was my reason. So I moved back to Albuquerque and entered into a school of ministry at a Calvary Chapel, part of the Calvary Chapel movement out of Costa Mesa, California. There's several large Calvaries here, and one of them has a school. And just began to seek God. And I was working full-time for a company called Bios. I was involved in retail sales. So I was working full-time, going to school full-time. And I met Renee Bio, the owner's daughter, at the store. And I won't give you all the details, but it was through that employment that God connected me to her. And again, there's a lot more detail to share, but yeah. Her dad is a Christian, great man of God, and he gave me a lot of flexibility when I was going to school, and you know, gave me hours that were acceptable for that schedule. And we started to interact. It probably took about a year and a half, 2 years for us to really connect, but that's how it happened. Yeah.
Wow, that's great. So maybe final question about this part of your story. So when you go to the School of Ministry, how old are you at this point?
Let's see. I am now 22.
Oh, okay. Okay. So so you were still fairly young, although one of the interesting things that I'm finding as I do interview episodes of the podcast is that, you know, the thing that people thought they had, you know, that God had for their life, once they sort of opened up their, you know, their hearts to whatever it was that God wanted to do, you know, he can change that. And so we've had a guy that was a truck driver for 25 years and now is, you know, teaching church leaders in India. And so you were still fairly young, although you had already had almost another life in Seattle, right? So, you know, it was when you surrendered your life to the Lord that things radically changed, including your whole trajectory of your life, right?
Yeah, some of the details I didn't include is that I was a serial entrepreneur. That's really what I was involved in. I was buying and selling real estate. I was, you know, going to auctions, buying, you know, large lots of computers, reselling them. And I've had this kind of entrepreneurial bent ever since I was a kid. And I would buy and sell things and always looking for an opportunity. What I didn't tell you is that before I moved to Seattle, I had a commercial bungee jumping operation.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had... Wow. Jumped. Actually, I was living in Colorado at the time. After high school, I moved to Colorado, and I had jumped with an outfit in Boulder, Colorado called Air Boulder. And it was a great thrill. I've always been a bit of a thrill seeker. But what was really exciting to me was the fact that there was people lined up about 100 deep shelling out $100 a piece to do this bungee jump. So my entrepreneurial engine started turning, and I did research. There was only 30 companies in the U.S. at the time. And so I started to do some investigation about where to get training, and I found a group in Southern California, Central California, rather. I started that bungee business at the age of 20, and that lasted about 2 years. I didn't include those details, but I traveled all over the U.S. doing bungee jumps, even took it into Mexico and other spots, and actually started a consultancy as well. I helped other bungee companies get started. So one of the things I did mention, something you said surfaced it, was my ambition was to make money. And I was going to do it. You know, that's all that mattered to me, was to be successful and make money and find my place in the world that way. And so when the bungee craze ended, that's when I moved to Seattle, started working up there again. But I would say my trajectory change was that I was this ambitious entrepreneur, and I was going to have lots of stuff and lots of money and all those things. And that's why when I was in Africa and I'm journaling and saying, you know, all I wanted, I don't want anymore. All the things I thought I needed to be happy, I don't need them. It was profound for me to say that, because God had just, he'd taken it all away. I mean, when I wrote, I'm the richest man on planet Earth, I really felt that way.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. And then, you know, God redeems things, because I've been a bit of a, I've continued to have that entrepreneurial bent in ministry. The church I was on staff at for 10 years that I mentioned, I started an organization that was a kind of incubated in the church called Lifeline Missions. And we took students, high school and college students, on overseas mission trips. And I think one summer we took 700 of them overseas. So,
wow.
Yeah, that happened about, Lifeline was about, lasted about 7 years. When I transitioned out of the church, obviously I stepped away from that. But so, and then starting even 1615, it was that, I think that entrepreneurial spirit that God had put in me that had now been redeemed, and, you know, was just taking risks, starting new things and ventures for the sake of the gospel.
Wow. Well, that's great. A lot of follow-up questions to that. For now, Matthew, this seems like a good time for us to take a quick break. So let me just allow my friend Tom Mueller to say a few words, and we'll have some more questions for you on the other side.
Sounds good.
At 1-8-Catalyst, we have a deep heart to create resources to help you find great commission fulfillment. Our latest book resource is titled What You Do Shows Who You Are, a book on the 6 marks of a disciple of Jesus. We believe that this book is a great way for you to grow spiritually and then take that growth and share it with others. Intended to be a small group or Sunday school class study, we believe that spiritual growth happens best as you work through each of the 6 marks with a group of other believers. Be sure to get a copy for each of the folks in your small group today. Available on Amazon.com.
Well, Matthew, I'm just so enjoying hearing your story, and there's a lot of follow-up questions potentially, but I guess what I really am interested in finding out is, so you're going to, you went to Ghana, right? And it seems like that's a pretty seminal moment. That's a pretty big moment for you. You know, you're doing this journaling, so you kind of come back from that. And now when you were, when you went to Ghana, is that before you went to the School of Ministry?
It was. Yeah.
Okay. So then probably the opportunity for the School of Ministry came as a result of some of what God was doing. So the School of Ministry, is it similar to like a Bible college or
yes,
a seminary, or at what level?
It had 2 elements, more of a Bible college, but then there was what you might call a graduate program, if you will, for those who went through it and wanted to consider pastorate. There was something called the Shepherd School. So
okay.
School of Ministry, more Bible college, Shepherd School, more for folks who are feeling that, you know, calling to enter into the pastorate.
Okay. So in terms of serving in full-time ministry then, did you feel like that came from your time at the School of Ministry? What happened there that you felt like, hey, God really wants to use me in a particular way?
Well, when I was in Ghana, again, just this one summer of exposure to being a part of God's plan, you know, just it all made sense to me. One of the, I guess, graces God has given to me that I need to thank him for more often is that, you know, when he rescued me, when I became a disciple at age, 20, 21, whatever that was, that time frame. And then I end up in Ghana. I understood his mission immediately. I mean, this was obvious to me that this is the greatest movement in history. Getting the gospel to all nations, tribes, and tongues just made sense. And so really thankful that very early as a believer, I had exposure to this grand narrative, this story of God So what happened, I was talking to my friend Chris, who was really instrumental in discipling me, and I said, Chris, I want to do ministry. And he, you know, was familiar with my life and my waywardness, and he said, you got to get grounded, man. He said, you need to grow. So he said, you ought to consider Bible college or something like that. So that's really how that transpired.
Mm.
And I think studying the Bible was really key. I've heard it said that the Bible is the best mobilizer, Mike. I mean, if you look for what's there, you know, if you let the Bible speak for itself, you find that the Great Commission is this central thread that goes from Genesis to Revelation. But the problem that we miss that thread so often because we are viewing the Bible as a how-to manual for life. Not that it doesn't have instruction on living. That's not the point. But the Bible is a revelation of God. It's him. It's his story. And so that season of studying the Bible in depth, I began to see more clearly what had been already revealed to me in Africa. But now I had the foundation of God's word. I just saw that this is the story. You know, again, the greatest movement in history. And so what happened is after I graduated the school, I approached the pastor of this church, and I said, I'd love to be a part of mobilizing this congregation, the young people in particular, to help them experience what I've experienced. And there was a dictum that I used to throw around a lot. I still do. And I don't know who said it, but tell me and I will forget, show me and I will remember, involve me and I will understand. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think people need involvement in God's work to understand it. You know, we need to help every believer find their place in this story. Mm. And he said, yeah, you can do that. He said, but you need to do it on staff. So I didn't know I was interviewing at the moment, but that's actually what happened. And we went to lunch and that was it, and ended up 10 years on staff at that church, mobilizing young people initially, and then eventually taking on the missions pastor role and mobilizing the whole congregation.
Wow, that's great. So during those 10 years, it sounds like that role even changed some. If you were doing young people at first, and so it was probably fun. You probably got to see some of those young people become older and maybe even help you in, you know, once they've been overseas or they've had an opportunity, there was probably a pretty neat movement there.
It was remarkable. You know, I mentioned we started a short-term missions organization called Lifeline Missions that was incubated inside of Calvary Albuquerque is the name of the church. But it was incubated inside of that church. And again, over our run of ministry, 7-8 years, I think it was, Lifeline Missions existed. And we took thousands of young people overseas in total. And it was incredible because that operation was entirely led by intern volunteers who had just graduated high school. We had a work-study program that we created, and they were the ones that made it work. So yeah, my wife and I have often looked back. Numbers of those young people, now adults, are serving in full-time ministry. Some have been deployed as full-time workers overseas. So remarkable to look back and see what God did through that season of ministry.
That's really great. Well, one final question for me, and it really is, as I've already mentioned to you, in some ways it's something that I'm just interested in to hear what you have to think about this. But also, I do think we do have a number of church leaders that are listening to the podcast. And so, and you actually, since you've been on staff at a church, you might have a unique take on this. So I'm wondering, as we look at helping people find Great Commission fulfillment, I think a lot of that starts at the church level, right? So if you were to talk to those church leaders that are listening, maybe even those that are on missions committees or, you know, involved in some way, what would be the number one thing that you would recommend to them that the Western Church could enable their congregations to become fully devoted followers, then are that are bearing fruit for Christ at the church level? What's your thought about that?
Well, you mentioned the Barna Report, which was done at the end of, I think, 2018, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And it was done in conjunction with a seed company. And it revealed that there is great confusion in the church about the Great Commission. When you have the majority of Christians who don't know what the Great Commission is or can't identify a verse that talks about the Great Commission, we've got a real problem on our hands. And I think it kind of goes without saying, we're biblically illiterate in our churches. And so, you know, we have Game Day Sunday, and it's this giant production, and I hope I'm not stepping on too many people's toes.
No, I think it's okay, yeah.
But, you know, God doesn't come through for who he is. His story is not told. It's more of a psychological soothing, you know, on Sunday morning, practical how-tos, you know, how to get along with everybody, how to be successful. And the God of Scripture is not seen. He's not exalted. His story is not emphasized. And so, of course, the Great Commission is going to get lost. So I mentioned it earlier, the best mobilizer is the Bible. It's Scriptures. Mm-hmm. But you have to let them speak for themselves. You know, we need to be teaching the Word in such a way that when people hear a message, they walk away saying, I saw God today. I mean, that should be every pastor's prayer when they get in the pulpit. When God, I want people to see you this morning. I want people to see Christ. Am I preaching in such a way that you are visible, that you're the one who's exalted and seen? And am I tying in this master story? Again, we're calling it the grand narrative, but the Bible is one master story. There's a lot of subplots. There's a lot of substories, but if we teach the Bible accurately, what's going to come through is God is on a mission to fill heaven with worshipers from every nation, every tribe, and every single tongue. And if we look to the resolution of God's story in Revelation, we know that to be true. It's going to happen. We see the end to which all of history is moving. It is Jesus being worshipped by redeemed people from all tribes, all tongues. Well, if that's where history's going, we ought to align ourselves with that. And we don't, you know. We've turned missions into a program. We've divorced it from discipleship. So I would say number one is let the Scriptures speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. And think about this thread, Genesis to Revelation, this main story or meta-narrative, and preach in such a way that that is central. Again, there's a lot of subplots. There's a lot of sub-themes, but there's one master story. And I think oftentimes we elevate the subplots and we miss the main picture. We miss the big picture. So that's my biggest encouragement of all. And then reflecting on my own experience, I would say if you're teaching that story and you're preaching in such a way that God is exalted and magnified, then you need to give people opportunity to participate in his mission. So you need to think about how do we connect our disciples in this church to the mission of God that he's given to our particular congregation. You know, when it comes to globally, we're going to focus, how do we get the whole body participating in making disciples, not only of our neighbors, but also of the nations?
That's so good. Yeah. Actually, hearing you talk, it sounds very similar to, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Todd Wagner in Dallas, but he's a pastor of a church called Watermark Church. And he has a phrase when you talk about this kind of the Sunday game day attitude that many churches have, that many church leaders are making this deal with their people, right? And so the deal is, hey, you give us some money so we can kind of keep the lights on and kind of keep doing what we're doing. In exchange, we won't ask much of you. And together we'll say that we're doing everything that God is asking us to do. And that is just so not it, right? That
is.
And so, yeah, you have a very similar attitude. And so I've totally just stolen that phrase from Todd, because I think God just wants more from us, right? And particularly as it relates to being involved in being his witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. So good words, Matthew. I really appreciate it. So before I let you go, just tell folks if they want to learn more about your ministry and what you guys are doing, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, I think probably the best place is our website, which is 1615.org. That's the numerals, 1615.org. And then we've got all the social media platforms, and I think you can link to those off of our website, so I'll just make a convenient go there. But Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those things. We also have some other resources, the mission table. You can also link to that off of our main website. We have this ongoing conversation about missions. We've recorded three seasons of episodes, but we gather leading missions thinkers and practitioners around the table, and we just hammer out conversations on missions. And you can, again, link to that website off of 1615.org. So yeah, that's the best place.
Okay, great.
1615.org.
Oh, great. And I know you have your book, right? When Everything is Missions. And that I'm sure it would be a good tool for church leaders that are thinking about this stuff as well?
Yeah, it would really hit on some of the things that I talked about with this meta-narrative and this mission of God. It's got elements of that in the book. And you can get that off our website too. It also has its own dedicated website. You can link to that off of 1615.org as well.
No, that's great. That's great. All right. Well, listen, Matthew, thank you so much for your time. And yeah, even as I'm here listening to you talk, I think, boy, I sure hope we get to do this again, because there's two or three other kind of key things I'd love to talk to you about eventually. So thanks so much. It's been really great to have you, and appreciate what you're doing.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining me for this, the latest episode. I want to thank Matthew Ellison so much. What a great job. Sure appreciate you, Matthew. I've really enjoyed getting to know you. I'm hopeful that there's a lot more ministry that we can do together. I would recommend to all the listeners to check out their information at 1615.org, as he just mentioned. Thank you again, Matthew. I would highlight for the listener again, Great Commission fulfillment comes as we understand God's word and then obey it, right? And so I would just recommend that this week, maybe as you're listening to this podcast and you think, boy, I really want to get on this. And so there are plenty of resources we have at 18catalyst.org as well, including a 5-day-a-week Bible reading plan, a brand new worksheet on how to discern God's will, a lot more of those resources coming along the way. And so stay tuned for that as well. I also want to mention our request line. If there's a episode that you would like to hear, a topic you'd like us to cover, you can call us at 303-335-9658, and we would love to consider your request. Thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to already having you with me on the 12th episode of the Catalytic Podcast. Thank you for joining me for the latest episode of the Catalytic Podcast. For more information, be sure to visit our website at 18catalyst.org. And never forget, the Great Commission is a command that Jesus gave you as a Christian to obey. I'll be praying for you that you find your part in it. See you next time.